Hello, this is Mary Rose Cottingham with the Decatur Herald and Review for Monday, May 9th, 2016. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Dog, Butt Kiss, and Easy Rider. This is written by Tony Reed. It's just a doggone shame when a member of the family can't get around like they used to. Take 10-year-old Butt Kiss, for example. The big Newfoundland mix's owner, Lauren Podlinsek, frequently does. Despite expensive and extensive treatments, Buttkiss has been left with a medical condition that makes getting around a challenge. The dog's wobbling frame won't let him go for any long walks, but the enormous black hound, named for the legendary Chicago Bears linebacker, knows how to do an end run around adversity. He wakes Podlinsek every morning, so she can chauffeur him for his 6:15 daily drive. They hop into a green Dodge van, bought especially for his use. His previous Pontiac Grand Am was totaled in a deer collision in November, and set off. Podlinsek isn't sure how many miles they zip around town, but she says she must drive the same route, or Buttkiss gets upset. He also likes to ride shotgun, and won't tolerate cutting corners to try and rush the trip. Like Ralph Waldo Emerson, Buttkiss believes life is a journey, not a destination. Oh no, we have to go for about 25 minutes, said Podlinsek, a former junior high school literature and social studies teacher, married to Jim Podlinsek, who is also a soft touch when it comes to dogs. His wife, who retired 4 years ago from teaching, had actually thought she would be able to sleep in until the decadent time of 7 a.m., instead of giving up at 5:30 a.m. when she was working. But now I get up at 6 a.m. every day, says Podlinsek, age 68. That's when Buttkiss wakes me. Buttkiss is a rescue dog, as is Lola, the Podlinsek's fully ambulatory border collie, and Serena, their equally able-bodied cat. Lauren Podlinsek says the couple have had many pets over the years, but none quite like Buttkiss. He's got the Buttkiss temperament to a T and wants everything his way, she says. Oh my God, I'll never name another dog after a football player. Buttkiss is just too smart for his britches. Back when they had the Pontiac, his travel history included figuring out how to adjust the wiper speed to make them swish to go and fro faster, so he could see better, explains Lauren. He also figured out which button to press to lock the doors, and once even locked her out, and even how to turn the engine off and sound the horn. I was at the vet's early one morning to pick up medicine, and all of a sudden I heard the horn, Podlinsek recalls. And then it wasn't very long before the horn goes off again. The vet said, I think you've been in here too long. Buttkiss wants to go for his ride. And yep, that's what it was. That dog figured out that if he sounded the horn, I would come. He hasn't mastered all the controls on the new van yet, but is enjoying the bigger spaces. Accompanied by his trusty co-pilot, they roam the happy highways where Buttkiss once walked, but cannot walk again. The big dog cruiser is such a familiar sight that stops along the way have grown used to seeing him and make provision for their visits. They give him milk bones at the drive-up at First Mid-Illinois Bank and Trust, said Podlinsek, who usually brings Lola as well to get also a treat. Podlinsek says she's tried buying her own milk bones, but Buttkiss won't eat them from her. On one occasion at the Walgreens prescription drive-up, another place where they dispense free milk bones, the dynamic duo pulled up to find the milk bone cupboard bare. Buttkiss leaned over and almost got his head out the window to make sure they saw him, recalls his owner. He was devastated. Podlinsek's friend, Carol Alexander, says Buttkiss also gets taken through the McDonald's drive-thru for treats after enduring any tough medical procedures, and he's had a few. She says he wolfs down 4 regular burgers, he's watching his weight and doesn't always eat the pickle, and says the kindness lavished on this dog's life would give anyone pause for thought. This is the first time I've heard of such routine and dedicated devotion to a dog's needs, Alexander said. She says the adorable Buttkiss deserves a bigger audience on his car rides and would like to see him featured on The Late Late Show with James Corden. She sees Buttkiss going for a spin in the segment where Corden takes stars out for a ride and sings karaoke with them. Corden's done carpool karaoke with Adele and Justin Bieber and Mariah Carey, Alexander says. Couldn't you just see Buttkiss in that passenger seat? In the meantime, Buttkiss continues to pluck at the heartstrings of his sympathetic owners and wants for nothing. He has bologna mixed with his dog food in the mornings because he likes it. and pork steak mixed with his dog food in the evenings because he also likes that. Podlinsek says the dog may ultimately be taking her for a ride, but it's hard not to love a big furry critter with a limp who takes such a big bite out of your heart. Yeah, we spoil him, she admits and then laughs. I've got a teacher friend who says, when I die, I want to come back as one of your animals, no doubt about it. Our next article is headlined, Illegal Immigrants Get California Work Papers, written by Patrick McGeevy from the Tribune News Service writer. Sacramento, California. In Mexico, Marco Nava was a trained cosmologist working in a salon. He specialized in hairstyling and coloring. But for 8 of the 9 years since he came to the United States illegally, he toiled in the shadows, working as a field hand harvesting grapes. Now Nava is in an air-conditioned barbershop doing what he loves, thanks to a year-old California law that allows immigrants in the U.S. illegally to apply for state licenses as barbers, cosmetologists, auto mechanics, security guards, and other professions. The law also covers professionals including doctors, nurses, psychologists, and pharmacists. It was a way for me to come out of hiding, said Nava, age 32. I no longer have to wake up at 4 in the morning to do something that is not my profession. Now I can take care of my kids, take them to school, and go to do something that I love doing. More than 300 people have applied for professional licenses from the state under a special process outlined in the new state law. Democrat State Senator Ricardo Lara, whose parents were in the U.S. illegally before they became citizens, wrote the law. Where someone was born does not dictate their potential to contribute to our workforce and grow our economy, Lara said. We have the largest immigrant population in the country, and we are the 8th largest economy in the world. In California, we know that integration works. California has led the nation in adopting laws aimed at easing the assimilation of those in the U.S. illegally, previously allowing such people to get driver's licenses, college financial aid, and law licenses. Advocates for strict immigration enforcement, including William Gein, said the state cannot adopt measures that conflict with federal laws that make it illegal to hire someone who is not in the country legally, or even help them get a job. California lawmakers should be focused on helping the American citizens they have sworn to serve, instead of illegal invaders that take U.S. jobs and taxpayer resources and corrupt our elections, said Gein, president of Americans for Legal Immigration Political Action Committee. California's workforce includes 1.85 million people in the U.S. illegally, according to an estimate by the Public Policy Institute of California. Until Governor Jerry Brown signed the law, professionals in California have had to obtain licenses by submitting their Social Security numbers as proof of citizenship. The law allows the state's 40 licensing boards to accept a federal taxpayer identification number, which those working in the country illegally can obtain in lieu of a Social Security number. The most sought-after licenses so far are for barbering and cosmetology, which had 151 applicants. Second was cemetery operator licenses, which saw 36 applicants, followed by security guard licenses, which drew 32 applicants. There were 24 applicants for automobile repair licenses, 15 for registered nurses, 14 for vocational nurses, and 7 for dental hygienists. 5 people apply for dental licenses. No one yet has sought a license to work as a physician. Laura said many of the professionals getting state licenses were already doing their work in California, but without state permits and the training required to make sure they do their jobs in ways that do not jeopardize public health. By improving access to professional licenses, we will increase tax revenues, utilize an untapped worker population, and promote stronger communities, Lara said. To obtain a professional license, workers must undergo training and pass a test showing that they know how to operate safely with proper hygiene and sanitation, so the public is protected, said Julie Landeros, an administrator at the state-licensed Cosmetica, Cosmetology, and Barbering Apprenticeship Program in Downey. It's amazing, she said, of the new law, because before there were a lot of undocumented people doing this work already. Now these people can be regulated. The training program students include Nancy Gonzalez, age 35, of San Francisco, who said she was grateful for the ability to get a state license, even though she is in the U.S. illegally. Gonzalez said Nava said it also helps their businesses to be able to show clients a state license. "I feel free," Gonzalez said in Spanish, with Landeros translating. "I am happy because I now help my family, my husband in a much better way without fear that an inspector can come in at any time and give me a $1,000 fine for working without a license." Our next article, also from the front page, is headlined, "Decatur Woman Dies in Cop Car Collision as Police Hunt Gunman," byline by Tony Reed from Decatur. A Decatur woman died early Sunday after her vehicle collided with an Illinois State Police squad car rushing to assist in the hunt for a Muhammad suspect who had allegedly shot and wounded a police officer. State police said the trooper was northbound on Oakland Avenue at 11 p.m. Saturday with lights and siren activated on his way to Interstate 72 when Kelly E. Wilson allegedly pulled out in front of him at the intersection with Harrison Avenue. Police said the squad car was unable to avoid striking the driver's side of Wilson's vehicle, the impact of the collision causing massive damage as it injured both drivers. Wilson was rushed to Decatur Memorial Hospital, where the 26-year-old mother of two was later pronounced dead at 1:07 a.m. Sunday. The 53-year-old trooper was hospitalized, and an update on his condition was not available Sunday night. Wilson was alone in the vehicle. The crash remained under investigation Sunday as police from multiple jurisdictions continued their hunt for the gunman. State Police Director Leo Schmitz issued a statement Sunday expressing remorse for Wilson's death. "At this difficult time, the Illinois State Police extends its sincerest condolences to her family and continues to investigate this crash," Schmitz said. "Our thoughts and prayers are with her family and the ISP trooper." The gun battle in Muhammad that had provided a wide police response involved a suspect later identified as Dracy C. Pendleton, age 35, of Bellflower, who police continued to hunt Sunday and described as armed and dangerous. Muhammad police say Pendleton had been pulled over in the village about 10:45 p.m. for a minor traffic offense. It's not clear exactly what happened next, but at some point, a physical confrontation ensued with Muhammad police officer Jeremy Charlot, who received a blow to the head and tried to subdue Pendleton with a shot from a stun gun. Muhammad police chief Mike Metzler, quoted in local media, said Pendleton then opened fire with a handgun, hitting Charlot in the arm. Charlot returned fire and likely hit the suspect. Bloodstains were found in a nearby house into which he ran. He came outside again with a rifle believed to be an AK-47 and opened fire before fleeing in a truck. That vehicle was later found crashed into the gates of a business near Muhammad called Mid-America Sand and Gravel. A white pickup truck is now missing from the business, and Muhammad police say they believe Pendleton stole it to make his escape. Charlotte was released after treatment at a hospital. State police said Pendleton is being sought for the attempted murder of Charlotte, age 35, and have warned the public to be on their guard. Police believe Pendleton may be forced to try and seek treatment for his gunshot wound. An extended family member told the Associated Press that Pendleton had recently moved out of his home after separating from his wife. Jack Dollahan said that Pendleton, his grandson's half-brother, works as a contractor and is the father of two sons, both younger than two. Pendleton is described as 5 feet 10 inches tall, 155 pounds, with blue eyes and blonde hair. Anyone with information about him can call 217-384-TIPS or go on to www.373tips.com. And our final story from the first page of the Decatur Herald Review is headlined, "North Carolina Faces LGPD Law Deadline." It's written by Associated Press writer Gary D. Robertson, Raleigh, North Carolina. North Carolina government and university officials were given until today to tell federal attorneys whether they would stop enforcing a new law blocking LGBT protections, particularly provisions requiring transgender people to use public restrooms that correspond to their biological sex. Republican Governor Pat McCrory said Sunday that he will decide how to respond to the U.S. Justice Department by the deadline, but sounds little interested in capitulating to the agency. Government attorneys contend the law approved by the state legislature in March violates the Federal Civil Rights Act. The Justice Department is trying to define gender identity, and there is no clear identification or definition of gender identity, McCrory said on Fox News Sunday. McCrory said he was not aware of any North Carolina cases of transgender people using their gender identity to access a restroom and molest someone, a fear frequently cited by the law's supporters as the main reason for its passage. The governor said there was no comparison between civil rights laws that forbid racial discrimination and the Justice Department's claim that federal law also protects transgender people. We can definitely define the race of people. It's very hard to define transgender or gender identity, McCrory said, adding his request for more time to respond to the Justice Department was denied. McCrory has called the law is a common sense measure designed to protect the privacy of people who use bathrooms and locker rooms and expect all people inside the facilities to be of the same gender. The governor has become the public face of the law called House Bill 2, which has been the subject of intense criticism by gay rights groups, corporate executives, and entertainers who demand the law be repealed. Department of Justice last week demanded McCrory, University of North Carolina leaders, and the state's public safety agency to respond by today whether they intended to stop enforcing the law. Repealing the law also would satisfy the attorneys, but GOP lawmakers who run the General Assembly had no plans before to do so by the deadline. The legislature scheduled no recorded votes or substantive action during today's House and Senate sessions. North Carolina has already paid a price for the law, with some business scaling back investments in that state and associations canceling conventions. The cost to state government could be even more acute. The 17-campus University of North Carolina system risks losing more than $1.4 billion in federal funds if they don't comply. Another $800 million in federally backed loans for students who attend the public universities also would be at risk if it's found that enforcing the law violates Title IX of the Civil Rights Act, which bars discrimination based on sex. The letter to McCrory said the law also violates Title VII, which bars employment discrimination. Senate leader Phil Berger of Eden said late last week that he is frustrated because we have a federal administration that is so determined to push a radical social agenda that they would threaten federal funding. I just think the people should be frustrated and people should be angry. University of North Carolina President Margaret Spellings, who started her job in March, has said while the university system is obligated to follow the law, it did not endorse the law. Spellings said later she hoped legislatures would change the law, which could discourage promising faculty and students from coming to system campuses. A response from University of North Carolina or McCrory considered unacceptable to the Justice Department could lead to litigation. Civil liberties groups and several individuals already have sued to challenge the law, which also prevents local governments from passing rules giving protections to lesbians, gays, and bisexual and transgender people while using public accommodations such as restaurants and stores. The state law was designed to block an ordinance by the City Council in Charlotte. In the local section of the Decatur Herald Review, we find an article headlined, Well-Traveled Bee Teaches. It's written by Valerie Wells of the Herald and Review. Betsy is a busy bee. This is from Decatur. The plush toy, mascot of Janine Arrington's fourth grade class at South Shore School, has traveled to Scotland, Australia, New Zealand, Hawaii, Texas, and Mexico with Arrington's longtime friends, Jeff and Benita Amenda. I don't really know how it started, Benita Amenda said. We've been friends for years, and we were just talking. Much like the favorite elementary school class project, Flat Stanley, where people take photos of a boy made of paper in various locations and students track his travels, Betsy's adventures with the Amendas provided the fourth grade with very vicarious trips, photos, Facebook chats and videos, and even souvenirs. We brought them Lays back to them from Hawaii, Benita Amenda said. We always try to do something like that. From Scotland, they delivered tea and cookies. and most of the students, as well as Edrington, had never drunk hot tea before, though it's a staple in the British Isles. After each trip, they drop by the classroom to show photos and tell stories about their travels. And in between visits, Edrington uses their latest adventure as a jumping-off point for units about the history, geography, and culture in the area they're visiting. Edrington held an impromptu verbal quiz in her class Thursday when the Amendas visited with tales of their latest journey to Texas and Mexico. "What's the name of the native peoples of Australia?" Hands shot up all over the room, and the answer is Aborigines. "Who's Shrek?" A sheep who ran away to avoid being sheared and strayed, gone for 6 years. When he was found, his wool was cut off, and it was enough to make 20 men's suits. Shrek also got to meet the country's prime minister. "What's the name of the ship that serves as a tomb for its crew that died in the attack on Pearl Harbor?" "I know it's a state," said Joey McGinn. After some discussion, the class agreed it was the Arizona. "The Amendas are retired and have always been keen travelers," Bonita Amendas said. Betsy B. traveled in her purse or in Jeff Amendas' camera bag, and they took photos with Betsy posed in front of landmarks and famous places. The connection with the Amendas provided a ready-made way to make the study of the various countries real and fascinating, Edrington said. Our next article from the local section is headlined, "Decatur Memorial Hospital Makes Parking Spots for Servicemen." It's written by staff writer Justin Kahn. Tim Stone, Decatur Memorial Hospital president and CEO, was in his office when he was called out to meet some surprise visitors. The operator calls and says, "There's some special guests here at the front desk," Stone said. "I walk out there, and there are these two guys from the U.S. Army in full uniform standing there. I'm thinking, I'm too old to be recruited." The two servicemen, it turned out, were recruiters, but they were headed north on U.S. 51 on their way to Peoria. They saw the yellow ribbon Decatur Memorial Hospital had hung on a sign at the intersection of McKinley Avenue and U.S. 51 that read, "We support our troops," and told Stone they wanted to identify who was responsible for the placement of the ribbon and tell them how much it meant to them. Stone, an Air Force veteran, had come up with the idea. "They just said they wanted to shake the man's hand who was responsible for that and to tell them, 'God bless you, thank you, and it's a privilege to be of service,'" Stone said. "I started getting kind of teary-eyed. These are the guys who had both recently been in the, you know what, as we used to say, in the Air Force. It occurred to me after meeting those guys that we could do a little more. I wanted to do something for members of our workforce who are in the National Guard, Active Guard Reserve, active duty, or veterans and their families. So we've created this special area where we have those little yellow ribbons for our employees and their family members who are serving or have served in recent conflicts." A few days later, during a trip to a medical facility in St. Louis, Stone noticed some parking spots designated specifically for active members and veterans of the armed services. With a chance meeting with a serviceman in Decatur still fresh in his mind, he decided to do the same at Decatur Memorial. In March, signs were put up in parking lots all around the hospital, designating spots for current and former military personnel. "A lot of veterans don't get around like they used to," Stone said. "I thought it would be a good thing to do for them." Harry Pardue is a 70-year-old Army veteran who volunteers at Decatur Memorial Hospital, transporting patients in wheelchairs to different parts of the hospital. Parked in one of the veterans' active military spots in Lot 1 on the corner of Hay and Edward Streets, Pardue listened as Stone told the story of why he chose to have those designated spots. "You did good, sir," he told Stone. "This is fantastic," said Pardue, who served in the Army from 1965 to 68, and again from 75 to 2001. "It's good for Decatur Memorial Hospital to let people know who are or were in the military to know that we are appreciated." Our next article is headlined, "Fleming Leaves Children's Museum," written by staff writer Justin Kahn. Saturday's Children's Museum of Illinois Duck Derby was bittersweet for Kate Fleming. Fleming was with the museum for more than 4 years and served as executive director on an interim basis twice before landing the job in June 2015. Saturday was her last day. Fleming is starting a new job at Millikan University as program coordinator in the Center for Entrepreneurship. "It's hard to leave a place you love," Fleming said. She was hired in 2012 as the Decatur Children's Museum's marketing and fundraising coordinator and served as interim executive director before Nicole Bateman was hired for the position. When Bateman left to become the community marketing manager for Economic Development Corporation of Decatur in Macon County in April 2015, Fleming was again appointed interim director. 2 months later, she was hired as executive director. Fleming said the job at Milliken was closer matched to her focus while at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, where she earned her master's in nonprofit management. My background is arts management, and when I saw that position at Milliken, it meshed really well with my academic background, Fleming said. I'm excited to be working with the arts, but also still community members. I'll be promoting entrepreneurship in student ventures. So this was a great training ground for me as far as helping them work through what types of problems they may come across in their ventures. Children's Museum Board President Betsy Tanner said the position would be advertised and said the board hoped to be doing interviews by June. Last time the job opened, we had over 30 resumes, and we've already had several people in the community express interest, Tanner said. The big thing with the job is the museum is not only the educational aspect in the curriculum, it's also a business. We need someone who can wear multiple hats. Rachel France will serve as interim executive director. Rachel is willing to bridge that gap until we find someone, Tanner said. I know Rachel. She's someone who has expressed interest in owning her own business. She's willing to do it on an interim basis because she's scheduled to move to St. Louis at the end of the summer. There'll be plenty for Franz and whoever becomes the new executive director to oversee. The Children's Museum is in the process of adding new exhibits outside the building, Tanner said. The exhibits will be ready in mid to late June. I'm excited to see who they bring in, Fleming said. Hopefully, I've started enough projects, programming, and relationships that they can continue to build on. Nicole Bateman did a lot during her time here, and I think the museum as a whole has done a lot in 4 years. It was a fun time for me. Our next brief article is from Decatur, headline, Woman Dies in Crash. A Decatur woman died early Sunday when the vehicle she was riding in on Martin Luther King Jr. Drive left the road and hit a utility pole. The accident happened at 2:39 a.m. close to Keller Lane, said police, and police said Channing L. Davis, age 22, was taken to Decatur Memorial Hospital's emergency room. She was pronounced dead at 3:10 a.m. from multiple injuries to her head and body. A second 20-year-old woman in the vehicle was hospitalized, but no update on her condition was available Sunday night. Decatur police said alcohol appears to be a contributing factor in the accident. The crash is being investigated by the police department's Fatal Accident Investigation Team. Also from Decatur, another article headlined Rail Crossing Work. Six railroad crossings west of Illinois 48 in rural Macon County will be resurfaced in a rolling series of repairs. Norfolk Southern crews begin their work today in Christian County before working their way into Macon County, where they will resurface the following crossings: Andrew Street Road, Archery Club Road, Zion Chapel Road, Public Road, Elwyn Road, and Mount Auburn. The Macon County Highway Department will handle detours and traffic control. In a third article here from Effingham, two hurt in crash. A Dietrich driver was injured and later charged with the illegal consumption of alcohol Saturday after an accident in Effingham County that resulted in the driver and his passenger being airlifted to the hospital. State police said Corey Willenborg coasted through a stop sign about midnight as he was northbound on 2100 Avenue at the intersection with Illinois 33. His pickup truck collided with a semi-truck, and both Willenborg and a 15-year-old passenger were flown from the scene to Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A spokesman for Carl said Willenborg had been treated and was released Sunday. An update on the 15-year-old's condition was not available. In addition to the alcohol charge, police said Willenborg was ticketed for disobeying a stop sign, having no insurance, and failure to wear a seatbelt. We will take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald Review. Please stay tuned.